This is the Bat Pod. Bat Pod.
Grab your bat microphone. It's time to start the show. Like a court of owls, the mystery is starting to grow. Let there be no debate. It's about to begin. Keen like Bruce Wayne, quick like Tim Drake, fierce like Damien. Grab your headphones, listen up, you know you love it. Drop the facade. Like the Dark Knight Detective, they've got some perspective. They're a pure crime-fighting collective. It's the Bat Pod.
Welcome to the Bat Pod. My name is Bill Beer, and joining us tonight, Jay Loving.
Hello.
How's it going, sir?
Going well.
That's good, that's good. So tonight on the podcast, we're going to talk Batman number 98, Batman the Three Jokers number one. Our topic of the week is the top three Batman artists. And then we have our segment again, Ask the Bat Pod, where we will take questions from you and we will answer them. So, okay, let's head to the books.
The Bat Pod is a spoiler podcast. Please read the comics we're reviewing so you can enjoy the show. We're proud to be a member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network.
Our first book tonight is Batman number 98. Your writer is James Tynion IV. Artist, Jorge Menes. Colors, Tamu Mori. Letter, Clayton Cowell. Cover, March, Mori. Variant cover, Francisco Matina. Associate editor, Dave Welgos. And editor, Ben Abernathy. And in this issue, we revisit the Cool Room. Riddler and Scarecrow play a game of chess while other villains are playing a twisted game of bingo. Batman is still talking to Alfred in his head while the toxins Punchline gave him are being flushed out. We finally get round two of Harley Quinn versus Punchline, and Batman wakes up just in time to take out Punchline. Batman decides to call in the family, and the issue ends with Catwoman offering to make Penguin a billionaire. So when we start this book, we have a little bit of a character study between, you know, the Scarecrow and the Riddler, which is kind of cool. They're playing a game of chess, but they're not really playing chess. Scarecrow, you just get into what Scarecrow's about right here, and they have a little fight because Scarecrow is trying to get under Riddler's skin. And I like this little interlude here in the cold room. What did you think about this first scene in this book?
I thought it was a good way to start it. We're showing the Scarecrow who was just taunting Riddler. And as Cobblepot said, you know, as soon as Riddler goes off, he goes, well, that was very predictable. Anybody have any bets on how long it would take him to flip the board?
Right, right. Well, they're making Gotham like a bingo game, wherever right. the Joker goons are setting fires in Gotham and they're making bets. There, it just seems like all the villains are hiding out. They don't want anything to do with the Joker. They don't want to, you know, they don't want to intervene or anything. And Catwoman is there. I guess she's recovered from her injuries.
Yes.
So we get to that, and then we get back to this Batman, you know, and Alfred. And we saw this last issue. This issue, we see it a little bit more. We see Bruce in like a year one type of, you know, setting where, you know, they're talking about the utility belt. They are, you know, he's making some batarangs there. And basically, Bruce is having a conversation with himself. Alfred is his subconscious, and he's really trying to get over Alfred. Now, this is really... Basically, this really took over this issue. Did you get that feeling also?
Yes, I did. It was really the central point of this whole thing. The whole book was this conversation with Alfred in his head.
Yeah. They almost should have had like an interlude issue and made this one issue, it seems to me. Because it doesn't have much to do with Joker War. I mean, it was entertaining. I enjoyed the conversation back and forth and how he misses Alfred and that sort of thing. And, his grief. The other thing we get in this issue is Harley Quinn versus Punchline. What did you think of that little fight, round two?
It was interesting. I'll say not the center point of the book, but we got to see the definitely contrast of the two personalities. You know, Harley's kind of got the crazy devil-may-care attitude, and Punchline's much more focused, I think, and serious. And she's got all kinds of assumptions, I think, about what Joker's trying to do, and I think they're all wrong.
Yes,
like killing Batman. You know, she thinks Joker's trying to kill Batman, and that's not the case at all.
One of my favorite lines in this book is Harley Quinn, I guess it's later on the book, she says, you know, you think the Joker only cares about one thing. It's the bat. That's the right. only thing he cares about. And she's like, oh, when we kill Batman, and she's like, no, I don't think that's going to work out for you.
Right.
And there's one line in there that makes me believe that she doesn't even realize that the Joker doesn't wear makeup. This isn't makeup.
Right.
So I don't think she really, and you know, we get an asterisk there that has you read the Joker 80th anniversary issue to see Punchline's origin, which is kind of interesting. I did read that. It's kind of interesting. So
I read it too. It's interesting, but very short. It's only 10 pages of that book.
Yeah, it is short. So, and when we get back to Batman here, we see Bruce going through the grief, the five phases of grief. And here we've seen the depression. I think we finally get a little bit acceptance there. Alfred was like a father to him, pushed away a lot of the family members. He goes into, you know, Robin was sitting right across when Bane killed Alfred, and Catwoman didn't want him to come in and save Alfred, and there were different reasons why. So here at the end of this little scene, we sort of get Batman coming to the conclusion that he needs his family. His family's right. always been there, and he's heading back to the family. And it seems like it's been a while since he's had, you know, his family. We're talking about all the heroes in Gotham
right.
to help him out. So I did like seeing that. The other thing I did like is, you know, there's a scene where Batman, you know, wakes up and takes out Punchline. It's almost a whole page. It is a whole page, and it has other panels on top of it. He goes, I'm Batman. And on the page under his cape, you see the words Batman. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, it was. It was very surrealistic, but still very effective.
Yeah. I thought it was different. Not that you've seen that before. But end here, Catwoman tells Penguin she needs him and the Riddler to go. I don't know if they're saving Batman, helping Batman, but she's going to make Penguin a billionaire. Is she just messing with him right here?
I would think so, because the only way she could make him a billionaire was to give him control of Bruce Wayne's entire fortune, which I don't see her wanting to do.
No, I don't see that at all. Do you like how this issue is pacing the Joker War? Or?
I like this issue. In fact, it's for me, it's the best one yet of the arc.
I really enjoyed this too. It didn't seem like, you know, it didn't further the story. We didn't see Joker really. But I really enjoyed, you know, things that are happening in this issue, especially the fight between Harley and Punchline.
I think it advanced the story in this one area. And like I say, the best part about this book to me was this imagined dialogue between Bruce and Alfred, where Alfred ends up finally telling him, basically, it's time for you to stop this. Stop mourning me. Let go of me. Quit blaming yourself. Quit blaming Catwoman or Selina. Quit blaming Damian. And brace your family. Because it's going to take the whole family, I think, to win this war against the Joker. And so that was what I thought was the strongest part about this book, and what made it, to me, the best book so far in this story arc, and one of the best issues, I think, of Tynan's whole run so far.
Oh, I agree. you do have Bruce, you know, he's talking to Alfred and saying, remember when you used to make me that tea that would calm me down, or, you know, it helps with the stress, or you knew when I was having a hard time. I tried to make that, and it just wasn't the same. It wasn't like, you know, he's reaching for things that will help him remind him of Alfred. And what he needs to think about is the good stuff with Alfred, not all the bad stuff. And he finally seems to be, you know, to that point of acceptance.
Right.
Instead of pushing away the family, like I said earlier, is to embrace the family, embrace what he has.
Yes.
He does make a little joke there at the end when he pulls out the battery.
Yes.
Yes. So, yeah, I enjoyed this one. So, okay, we'll go ahead and head to our topic of the week.
The Batmobile. Let's go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbine to speed. You're ready to move up.
So, welcome to Topic of the Week. Our topic this week is our top three Batman artists. There are a lot of artists that's been on the Bat books over the years, and this was kind of a challenge. We picked our top three, or three that we really enjoyed, or however you want to say it. We'll start with you, Jay. What was your number three Batman artist?
Number three, I chose Jim Aparo.
Yes, Jim Aparo. He was actually my number two. You know, he was on Batman off and on from 1987 to up to 1999, and also with Detective Comics. So tell me what you liked about him the most. What is the iconic thing you remember about him?
He drew in a very fundamentally sound way. Had a good understanding of perspective and anatomy.
I actually liked the way, you know, his cape came over the front of his body.
Right.
You know, yeah. Covered up some of the signal. I enjoyed that. He started on Batman and the Brave and the Bold, and did a bunch of issues on Brave and the Bold, Batman and the Outsiders.
Right.
A great, great artist. And he's no longer with us. He passed away in 2005, so.
Yes.
Okay. My number three is an artist that I've liked for a really long time, and it is Kelly Jones. And Kelly Jones isn't your standard, you know, straightforward art on Batman. He did the Red Rain trilogy, which is the Dracula, Batman, Elseworlds. And he was on Batman from 1995 to 98. He started with issue 515. Off and on, and he ended with 552, and he's done a lot of Elseworlds and sort of a darker Batman. His cowl is a little distorted, you know, he has the big ears. Most recently he did a miniseries called Batman Kings of Fear, like a year or so ago, which I always enjoy his art. So what do you think about Kelly Jones?
I love Kelly Jones. I think of him more in the line of all the covers that he did, more so than the interiors.
Yes.
He's certainly would be one of my top three cover artists. And I love the way he drew Batman. It's very macabre. He's gruesome looking character.
And
his interpretation of it. And the exaggerated bat ears, it would not be anywhere at all practical. Stick up 3 feet above the top of the cowl.
No, not really. And he had some other characters in there. He had Deadman in there, and the way he drew Deadman in the Batman book, he almost looked like you could see his ribs, like he hadn't eaten in a while.
Right.
So, yeah, Kelly Jones was my number three. What is your number two?
My number two is Neil Adams.
Neil Adams, yes.
He came in after Carmine Infantino, and Adams has just a superior draftsman. I mean, there's just nothing, at least in the Batman he did then, nothing was ever askew. You know, the anatomy was spot on. The backgrounds, perspective were always tight. He showed Batman in a real, kind of more realistic looking way than some of the previous artists did.
And he sort of was ahead of his time almost. You know, when he came on, we hadn't seen art look like that.
No.
And, you know, we had talked about a couple issues that he had done previously. And, you know, he had, like, certain panels that you could have, or there are, you know, covers for hardcovers, and you could even have a poster. His Batman was just beautifully drawn.
Right.
So, my number two I picked, and we already talked about him, was Jim Aparo.
Right.
And he was one of those artists that you see his art and you know who it is right away. You don't have to guess or anything like that. And he's just a classic Batman, classic, you know, he did Detective, as I said before, Batman, and Outsiders he's most famous for. So, okay, let's go ahead and give us your number one.
My number one, Norm Breyfogle.
Absolutely. He's my number one also.
His work was so, I mean, sleek is a word that comes to mind. And he had a real good understanding of and use of light and darkness, and light and shadow. You know, he'd have certain scenes where Batman is completely illuminated and the villain is in shadow, or vice versa. One of my favorite covers of Batman is the one he did where Batman's standing in the alleyway during a thunderstorm and there's a lightning bolt behind him.
Yes, yes,
yes. And Batman is completely shadow except for his eyes and the yellow bat signal symbol on his chest.
He could do Batman, as I said, in shade or in the dark with a cape. And the cape was almost another person.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do know what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah. He showed action with the Batmobile that I've never seen before. You know, the way he drew his Batmobiles.
Right.
He was a part of Batman from 87 to 95. He did Detective Comics. We got Shadow of the Bat. He helped design Robin, Tim Drake, his costume. He helped with the Ventriloquist, the Rat Catcher, and Zazz.
Yes.
Yes. So, yeah, that's another artist that you see and you know exactly who it is. There's a lot of great issues with Norm Breyfogle. I mean, Norm Breyfogle and Jim Aparo, to me, are like one in 1A almost.
Right. It is for a lot of people, I think, have that same understanding or same thoughts.
Norm Breyfogle, actually, he came back and did a digital-only Batman Beyond Unlimited in 2012, 2013. I did catch a couple issues of that. It was different because it was so many years later, but you could still tell it was Breyfogle. So that's their top three greatest Batman artists. What was your top three? Was there an artist we forgot to mention? Let us know if there is. We'll go ahead and head to our next book.
Come on, Robin, to the Batcave. We haven't one moment to lose.
Our next book is Batman Three Jokers, Book One. Jeff Johns, writer. Jason Fabok, illustrator. Brad Anderson, color artist. Rob Lee, letterers. Mark Doyle and Amadeo Totoro, editors. Joker has escaped from Arkham Asylum. Batman in the Batcave being patched up once again by Alfred after an encounter with the Penguin. Here's on the radio of a gangland killing of the Moxon gangland family with eyewitnesses identifying the Joker as the killer. Barbara Gordon, working out on a treadmill, hears a news report of a second murder, a comedian, popular comedian, also live streamed by the Joker. Jason Todd is out trying to find some of the Joker's henchmen to try to trace down the Joker. When we learn of a third murder, three men at Ace Chemicals who were killed in the same style that created Joker in the Red Hood outfits. So also eyewitnessed as the Joker, as the killer. So we have three killings done almost simultaneously, all eyewitnesses, with eyewitnesses identifying the Joker as the murderer. Batman and Barbara go to Ace Chemicals first to try to start their investigation. We learn that one of the three is not actually dead. He goes, starts laughing. They put him in an ambulance where he's interrogated, almost killed by Jason Todd. And then meanwhile, the scene shifts back to a chemical tanker from Ace Chemicals driving along in a lonely wooded stretch, goes up to a small cabin in the woods. Joker gets out of the tanker, knocks on the door, and the door is answered by the Joker. And they two go and have a meeting with the Joker about what they're going to do next. One of them was going to help the Joker. One Joker was going to help the other Joker with the factory, while the other one helps with the casting call, quote unquote casting call. The investigation of Batman and Barbara lead them to, along with Jason Todd, to the Gotham Aquarium, which has been closed because of a plumbing issue. They learn that some of the chemical that was stolen has been put into one of the aquarium tanks, which has converted all of the fish and a shark into a smiling Joker fish and Joker shark. We get the reappearance of a Joker sidekick that we have not seen in many years, Gabby. A fight ensues in which Gabby, the shark, escapes, breaks out of the tank, and consumes Gabby. And then Joker shows up, is quickly subdued by Batman, tied up. Batman alerts Gordon that he has captured one of the Jokers. Gordon says, "We've got another one pinned down. Batman goes and leaves the Joker alone with Jason Todd and Barbara. And the Joker starts taunting Jason about the time when he killed him with the crowbar, taunts him into shooting him. So apparently leaving just the Joker and the Joker left. I've read his book three times now, trying to come up with a synopsis, and that was hard to do because so much happens in this book, and it goes back and forth quite a lot.
Oh, yeah.
It's about 40-some-odd pages, so it's about double the length of a typical comic book issue. The style is very much like Geoff Johns. One of the things we see is Geoff Johns loves the 9-panel page.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's in everything he writes, and it goes that way through here, which is can make the art seem a little bit hard to interpret because those panels, you know, have to be somewhat diminished in size in order to get them all on the page. So it makes it sometimes hard to tell exactly what's going on in the artwork, although the artwork is very well done. Fabok is an excellent artist.
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic.
I really enjoyed the book. I thought it was well done. After three readings, I can see a couple of places I think are where the pacing doesn't flow as well as I thought it did at first. To begin with, like those first few pages where we see essentially Batman's scars being inventoried or showing all the Batman scars,
right,
and how he got those didn't seem to contribute to the story at all. The main thing it illustrated was that Batman, in this reality, has a very ineffective suit. It doesn't stop anybody yes. It doesn't stop anything.
From stabbing him, you know, fire. Stabbing,
being burned, to chemical sprays, you know, the Joker with the acid flower on his lapel. You know, so that's like one more thing. On my second reading, I was thought, what exactly is this here for? I'm not real sure. Other than to give us, you know, him sitting there with Alfred sewing him up again for the umpteenth time to hear about the slaughter of the Moxon family, the crime family that Joker was after. So
one thing that I noticed right off the beginning in this book is, you know, they show the Batcave and he's got like replicas of his villains in there.
Yeah. That was another thing I don't know,
which we've never seen before that I can recall.
Nor I.
And he's got, like, props that the Joker used, the jokey Joker. You know, the gun that comes out with the little flag and, I guess, a replica of the Joker fish. And you got the Riddler Two-Face. That seemed kind of odd to me. I mean, it didn't really throw it off because it's only a couple panels there. But it just seemed different. Like, you know, when this story was first mentioned, it was in a Justice League issue. And I really thought that this was in continuity, but when they announced Black Label, it's like most Black Label stuff has not been in continuity. And I don't think this is in continuity because his costume that he's wearing, we haven't seen him wear that lately. Of course, Alfred is alive, which who knows when this was written. It was probably written like a few years ago.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not looking at this as a book that's in continuity.
Yeah.
I mean, Alfred is the clincher on that immediately. You know, like if Alfred's alive, then this is not part of current continuity. Or it's going to be a story in the past, set in the past. I don't know how they're going to do it.
You know, the three Jokers we have three central figures that are in the story that have had some kind of trauma with the Joker. We have Jason Todd, we have Barbara Gordon, and then, of course, Batman. But when they first announced this three Jokers, I didn't know what to expect, and I didn't know what to expect when I read this. I found this first issue very intriguing. I don't know if that we will find out at the end of this three-issue mini or whatever what or who the three Jokers actually are. Or it sounded like the Joker, to me, if I had to make a guess, kept creating Jokers the same way he was created.
Yes.
But I'm not 100% sure about that.
Nor am I. I mean, I'm not, to this point, I'm not ready to say, you know, that there's one Joker that created the other two. I'm just sort of going along for the ride.
Right, right, you know? Yeah.
Okay, there's three Jokers. How that's going to be explained, if it even is going to be explained.
Right.
Will come at some point.
And I didn't have any expectation reading this, because frankly, we've heard about this so long ago, it was like, okay, if this is a disappointing story, I won't really be that disappointed because I'm not expecting a lot.
Right.
But the artwork, as you said, is like, I don't think there's a bad panel, a bad page.
No.
You know, it looks pretty perfect to me.
Like I said, the only thing was that some of the panels, you know, on the 9-panel pages, it was hard to make out a little bit.
Yeah.
And because of that, some of the lettering was tiny. Extremely tiny. I mean, I almost had to get out a magnifying glass to read some of them.
Sometimes on digital, that's the one thing that you can, you know, double click on and it'll blow the panels up.
Right.
Which the artwork, you can really, you know, admire the artwork that way.
Yes.
One other question I had is, you know, there's always been this thing, does Gordon know who Batman is? Does Gordon know who Batgirl is? And there's a scene in here where he sort of acts like he knows who Batgirl is. He offers her a ride, and she's like, no, he don't know who. but you know,
Batman even asked her.
Yeah, yeah. Although it would be hard for Gordon not to know that that's not his daughter.
It's one of those areas where you have to suspend disbelief.
Yes. And I think we get a characterization of Jason Todd in here as the Red Hood. I like the characterization of him. He's really a vigilante. He doesn't have a problem with killing. And, you know, he really has it in for the Joker.
Right.
I found it kind of cool when you have the scene of the one Joker who, you know, has the big truck. And he pulls up to the cabin in the woods and knocks. And you see the Joker right out of the Killing Joke.
Right.
Or you guess, he's like, you're wearing my shirt. So you don't know who is who here.
Right. Yeah, he's definitely kept it obscure as to, you know, which one, if any of them, which one is the real Joker or the first Joker or however you want to. He's really left that obscure.
Right. I mean, there does seem to be a guy in charge, a Joker in charge, but you don't know really which one. I mean, they all look the same, basically. I do like that one full-page panel where it says, we do what we always do. We try to make a better Joker.
Right.
I like it. It's interesting. I like the Joker shark scene.
Yes.
That was kind of cool. And we mentioned Gaggy, you know, like a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
And there he is. I just started laughing when I saw him because, you know, I did the research on him. when I was doing it for Stump the Co-host, and I see him, I was like, holy cow, it's Gaggy.
Yes.
I don't know how he could be.
I don't know. I don't know how many years it's been since he appeared in the comics, but it's been
quite a number of years. It's been a long time. I don't know how he could be much help to the Joker. It's just this little, small little guy.
Jason even says, what's he supposed to do, trip us?
Yeah.
And he doesn't last long, yeah.
Gaggy, the Joker shark breaks out, and Gaggy looks like he is gone.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed this.
Me too.
I think with no expectation of it being in continuity and no expectation of, you know, just reading the story to enjoy it and not have to worry about anything else. I think that was a big thing. And, you know, you have throwbacks to Death in the Family and The Killing Joke, which is stories that when I first started reading Batman that I enjoyed. And it's cool to see, you know, links to that.
Yes.
Were you expecting Jason Todd here at the end? Were you expecting him to kill the Joker?
No, I was not.
No, that was a surprise. And do you think Barbara missed? Because she's like, he's like, you never miss. Because they both have reasons to want the Joker dead.
Right. I think her miss was intentional.
Yeah.
And he kind of even called it on her. And there was this one, a couple panels where he says, when have you ever missed? And she, next panel, it shows her just her eyes looking down towards the floor. And she looks up and there's tears in her eyes. And she said, screw you, Jason.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, he kind of revealed that, yeah, she did miss on intentionally miss.
But I don't think she thought that he was going to really do it.
No, I don't think she did either.
Because she did have a little shock on her face, but.
And, of course, at the end, he's like, I don't think he's second-guessing what he did, but he's like, man, I hope this was the right one.
But at this point, he doesn't know there's more than one, besides having three Joker-like crimes at the same time. So I look forward to this one. I actually got two covers for this issue. I got the one with the Joker in the red hood helmet.
Right.
And then I got the one that I have on the digital copy, which is, you know, the Joker holding the crowbar.
Right. That's the copy I got, the cover I got. I just got the one.
The Joker's holding the bloody crowbar. And whenever I think of Joker, you know, and the crowbar, I remember that issue from Batman and Robin from Grant Morrison where, you know, Jason Todd comes in and the Joker's all tied up and he beats up the Joker.
Right.
I remember that issue that fondly. So anything else about this particular issue?
No, other than I would encourage people to read it if you haven't considered it, because it is turning out to be, I think, a well-written book. I think a lot of people were not expecting anything good out of this because of, number one, how long it's been since the story was first pitched. You know, we're talking about 2016 2020, 4 years that this has been in the waiting. So I think a lot of people may have checked out and decided, it's not important, won't be worth reading, but I think it's worth your time.
Yeah, I mean, between the writing, the artwork, and the colors on this, the colors just pop.
Yeah.
Especially the purples, and, you know, it's a very colorful issue. So, yeah, I agree. I totally agree that, you know, if you weren't really looking for, I'd just pick it up for the art because it's really amazing. It's really amazing. So,
and there'll be two other books. I'm assuming they're going to be. And of course, as a lot of another thing that people think worry about with Geoff Johns was he gets behind. Like he got behind with Doomsday Clock big time. And there were a lot of delays between issues. Well, he has said that all three of the issues are already written, probably have been for some time.
Yeah.
So there shouldn't be any delay on them being released.
No, I think the next one is in October and then November.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
I look forward to it, so.
I do too.
Okay. Let's go ahead and head to Ask the Batpod.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol, As a symbol, I can be incorruptible. I can be everlasting.
What symbol?
Something elemental, something terrifying.
So, on this edition of Ask the Bat Pod, I asked for some questions on Twitter. And last time we had a few questions, and we had a couple left over, and I got some new ones for this week. So I'm going to go ahead and start with the first one. And Sean Ross asked, what do you see as the differences between the current Detective and Batman books, and how appealing to the different parts of the Bat audience? I do see the Batman book has been a big arcs, huge arcs.
Right.
The Detective book has been smaller arcs. There's been a couple issues. There was a Joker issue that was one and done. Big stories, big arcs in the Bat book. I enjoy both of them.
I do too. If I were to say a difference in how they're presented, Tynan's trying to keep a little bit more tighter control, I think, on the universe a little bit than what Tomasi's doing currently on Detective. Even though they're both in canon, they're the two premier books of the Batman universe, I think you always have a little bit more leeway with Detective Comics on exploring different storylines than you do with Batman proper. And I think we're seeing that a little bit with these two creators and how they're approaching it.
Yeah, you seem to have stories that, you know, when characters show up that might not be in Batman. We had the Spectre.
Right.
Was in. You wouldn't expect to see him in a Batman book.
Right.
Tomasi's had a few characters that he's created. I mean, I've enjoyed both runs for different reasons.
Yeah, I mean, don't press me to give a favorite because I couldn't tell you one because I like both of the books immensely and what they're doing. So,
okay, we'll go to our next question. And our next question is from Andrew. And he said, should Tynan have set aside a whole issue to deal with the Bruce-Alfred aspects within the last issue of Batman? I think a discrete issue solely dedicated to that would have been a real special issues in years to come. Which, I had mentioned that maybe they could have done an issue that wasn't Joker War. It was so well written. It was very well written. You know, if they had like a special or something, that would have worked.
I don't know.
But it worked the way it was, too. I don't think it needed anything either.
When I think about making that a separate issue, a special issue, I mean, your standard comic book issue today is about 23 pages of content. That would have been a lot of dialogue to cover between Bruce and Alfred.
Yeah.
Not that it couldn't be done, but no.
The two issues, I mean,
right.
It's hard to say, but I enjoyed what we got. But the dialogue felt special and felt, I really enjoyed that aspect of him, you know, kind of accepting that Alfred's not here anymore and getting his head back on straight and that sort of thing. So her next question comes from Rob Myers, and he says, Tim and Damian, who deserves the Robin mantle? We know it's Tim, but just asking for a friend. Which he does a Tim Drake podcast.
Okay.
So, who would you like to see? I mean, we have Damian as Robin, but is that your Robin? I know we talked about this before.
Currently, yeah, that's the current Robin. He's been that way since 2011.
Yeah.
With Batman and Robin.
Would you want to see a change to Tim Drake as Robin? Or
no, I don't think so.
Okay.
I like Tim Drake as a character. I mean, I don't know if you'd give him his own title or not, but I just like Damian. Damian is such a rich character, and you can do so much with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the fact that he's kind of a loose cannon at times, a bit of a pain in the neck.
I think the biggest thing is you can tell different stories with Damian that you haven't been able to tell with Robin.
Right.
So I like Tim as Robin and also like Damian as Robin at times.
Oh, yeah.
So.
But, I mean, you're looking at Damian right now as what all the one he's in is Teen Titans.
Yeah.
Because he's not, you don't have Robin appearing in any of the main Bat books, either Batman or Detective.
No, it sounds like he may be showing up in Detective in future issues. But so our next question is from Rob Lewis. And he says, what are your thoughts on Joker War so far? And we expressed that we enjoyed this last issue. You had mentioned that it might have been your favorite of the run so far.
Yes.
I do think that the next two issues, there's only two issues left in Joker War. There's got to be a lot that happens.
Yes.
Because it's wrapping up in two issues. But I've enjoyed what it is so far.
Have you been reading any of the tie-ins?
Yes.
I have too.
Have you read Nightwing?
Yes. Well, I haven't got, I'm not caught up on Nightwing, okay. But I've got all the issues.
Okay, I won't say anything, but the latest issue was really, really good.
Yeah, I haven't read the latest issue. Yeah. I'm too behind. I got two issues to catch up.
Detective, of course, we went over that one issue of Detective that was entertaining with Batwoman.
Right.
I didn't read the Red Hood one, the Red Hood issue.
I haven't got it. I'm going to.
Yeah.
And I've read two Batgirl issues that have been out.
Yes. Yep.
I think there are two more coming that are tie-ins on Batgirl.
Yep.
And I think Nightwing's going to tie in through issue 75. I've got them all written down. They just haven't come out yet.
The next issue of Batman, we may get more of the Batman family, so we might get all those characters show up. So
right.
That should be exciting. So
well, and something else, you talked about those only two issues left. There is an issue coming out called, it's going to be a one-off standalone called Batman, the Joker War Zone. And I don't know when that's coming out. Mm-hmm. I don't know how closely it's going to tie in to the main story, but I'm really curious as to, you know, hopefully they're not going to leave it to that book to resolve the Joker War.
I wouldn't think so. Maybe it's like I recall the book, but I don't recall what the solicitation was.
Yeah.
It could be wrapping up the after effects. You know, Marvel's big at, you know, having these books, the aftermath of whatever it is.
Right.
It could be that. I also know there is a Punchline Focus Special 2.
Okay.
That's coming out in November. So it sounds like she's a character that's going to stick around for a bit. Of course, we don't have any idea. So our next two questions are from Nick Wetmore. That was left over from last week. This first question is going to make us think. It says, which current writer-artist team would you like to place on a Bat book for 3 years? Also, which Bat book would you drop them on?
Boy, that's challenging question.
Well, it depends what team.
I mean, I will say, as far as dropping, I like Tynan, mm-hmm. but I don't necessarily think he's the best choice for a Batman book.
Do we want 3 years of anyone?
Well, I don't know. If they continue to come up with creative stories, mm-hmm. I wouldn't have any problem with it.
Right. You know, and we'd never see it, but as much as I enjoyed the three Jokers, Geoff Johns and Jason Fabok, but we'd never see it because Geoff Johns is not going to be on a book like that for a long period.
Christopher Priest, I think, could do a good job writing Batman.
Oh, yeah. That would be interesting.
I've even had some off-the-wall thoughts of a female writer, like someone like Kelly Sue DeConnick.
Mm-hmm.
Or drawing a blank right now. I can't think of the other person. But, you know, somebody to kind of shake things up and get a different perspective. And we had Tom King for 3 years, and I was perfectly happy with him. So, but I know that puts me in the minority.
Do you think it's hard for a creator to write Batman?
I think so. I think it's definitely difficult.
To come up with something new and refreshing and that sort of thing.
And yet still keep the nature of the character.
Yeah.
I think you're limited. There's some limits into it. You can't just go in and change everything in the main continuity book. You know, That was the reason they supposedly took King off after 85 issues, because the rest of his run, the way he described it, was going to change Batman in a fundamental way, and they got scared and backed off of it. You know what he was going to do, I don't know, but I think it had something to do with, you know, the Selina relationship, which he was supposed to come out with a book with Batman and Catwoman, and I don't know if COVID interfered with that or what. I haven't heard anything else about it.
It was actually announced today that it's going to be out the 1st of December.
Oh, okay.
Issue 1 is coming in December.
I haven't seen that.
So good I deal. Just saw that before we logged on here. So,
well, that's good, because I'm really enjoyed that storyline.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's extremely difficult. You're looking at a character that's 80-plus years. How do you keep it within its context? You know, don't do anything to really shake up the character, but be creative and fresh and entertaining. I think it's one of the hardest things to do.
Yeah, you're right about that.
And it's one of the reasons why I like Elseworld stories and out-of-continuity stories so much, because the writer, the creator, is not limited to those same things, and they can do a lot of creative things with it that you can't do in the continuity books.
Last question. Let's just say that it's a less than serious question. Nick Wetmore.
Okay.
I know Azzarello gave us hashtag Bat Dingaling, but will Batman's outfit ever bring back the nipples? Hashtag Rip Joel Schumacher.
I certainly hope not.
Yeah, I hope not. That can be retired. We saw it once. Not a fan.
Nope.
Or the bat butt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was really dumb, in my opinion. We'll go ahead and wrap it up here. If you'd like to leave feedback for the Batpod, our email is batpodpodcast@gmail.com. On Twitter, we are @bat_pod. We have a Facebook page, facebook.com/thebatpod. If you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, please consider giving us a review. We'd really appreciate it. A big thank you to everybody that has retweeted our show on Twitter and Facebook. So, until next time, same bat time, same bat channel. We will see you later.